Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
It's time for another episode of the Football's History Rewind on Pigskin Dispatch, where we go year by year through the history of the game of football. In this episode, we discuss the 1884 season and its rules revisions and spelling out of officiating duties. All this and more coming up in a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and this is another edition of the Football History Rewind, where we're going to go year by year through football history. We're all the way up to the year 1884 and part 7 of Pigskin Dispatch's series on American football history. And today's title, it's The Fair Catch and the Ref's Authority. Football was changing from its ancestor rugby in leaps and bounds. In the 1880s, it was mentioned earlier parts of the series that the year 1883 was busy with two conventions that modified the rules of the game. The rulebook was starting to really take form as sections were added to organize the rules. Prior to this, the rules were listed in no particular order and no particular organization to them. For instance, the coin toss, or toss-up of captains, was listed as Rule 39 in the original 1876 rules. Rules on kicks were scattered willy-nilly throughout the list of rules. Rules number 1, 2, 3, 29, 30, 36, 40, 41, 42, 46, 47, 49, 50, 55, and 56 all pertain to kicks and punts. Rules on scoring, tackling, etc. were sprinkled in between the rule lists of the 1870s and early 1880s. The following year kept up on the rule organization principles adopted in 1883. The year 1884 was similar to 1883, too, as it had multiple rules committee meetings to adopt and modify football rules, because there was a lot of changes going on. The first rules convention took place on October 15, 1884 at the Fifth Avenue Hotel in New York, just where the other ones had taken place, and received a lot of business from early footballs that hosted nearly all of the rules conventions. This meeting was attended by Walter Camp and E.L. Richards from Yale, G.M. Kimball and A.D. French from Harvard, and C.W. Byrd and J.B. Harriman of Princeton. A letter was received from Columbia in which the school withdrew from the association, so down to just three schools. Section 1 of the new rules of the 1884 concentrated on the kicking game, fair catches of kicks, punts, and seemed to be a major priority of this convention as a few rules were amended to mold fair catch guidelines. Up until that time, the word fair had a direct relationship in the rules onto how the ball would be put in play. A fair was a technical name of putting the ball in play from the sideline when out of bounds. Fairs were considered downs, even though they didn't start the same way as other plays. Fair catches were defined in 1876 as a catch made direct from a kick or a throw forward, or a knock on by one of the opposing side, or from a punt out or punt on. This original rule went on to request that a player who performed the fair catch to mark the spot by making a mark with his heel at the spot where he made the fair catch. A knock was a deliberate hit of the ball by a player in possession of almost like a volleyball serve. Knocking and tossing a ball forward towards an opponent's goal line was illegal. Remember, no forward pass at that time. If the ball was thrown or knocked forward, the opposition could fair catch any interception of the loose ball. A punt out was a punt made after a touchdown from behind the opponent's goal line. The team swapped sides after every score in a sort of sucker's will walk way from many sandlot and backyard football games are played now. A punt on was a punt made from the field of play from another punt. A common scrimmage play was that the punt at the time, when the ball was punted, it was said to be in touch where a ball could anyone could gain possession of. And when the ball was in touch, the first player on his side who touches the ball down must bring it to the spot of the touch or the touch line. In the absence of the forward pass, this planned loose ball play was the best chance at times that a team could advance the ball great distances. There was no scoring that could be done with the use of a punt. Drop kicks and place kicks were the only way that the balls directly advanced off the feet could turn into awarded points. So in more common terms, a punt in that time, it was a free ball, much like our free kicks are today, the kickoffs. You know, how you can go down and if the kicking team recovers it, it's their ball. Well, they've changed those rules later on with the punts, but that's the way that a punt was as well. The 1884 modifications to the fair catch were substantial to the game of that period. One modification stated that a fair catch could now be made behind one's goal line. Another rule regulated contact by an opponent of the player who caught the ball fairly. And when a player was interfered with after he caught a ball, the offended team's captain would have the option to take a free kick or a down where the interference occurred. Now some snapshots from that 1884 season. The Lehigh and Lafayette series got its start in 1884 as Lafayette won 50-0 in this inaugural meeting. It is now referred to as simply the rivalry, and it's the original rivalry because these two Eastern Pennsylvania teams are about 12 miles away from each other and have played about 155 times since then, and it is the most played rivalry in all of football. Unbelievable. Now, also in 1884, the college season had no clear-cut champion, with the official title listing Princeton and Yale as being selected as the co-national champions. These two once again met at the end of the season at the Polo Grounds on November 27, 1884. Princeton finished with a 9-0-1 record, and Yale completed their slate of games at 8-0-1. The Eli entered the annual contest with a 25-game winning streak as they arrived in New York City, and they needed only to win a 26th game in a row to ensure their place as a first team to win three consecutive undisputed national championships. The Tigers had other plans, though. The 1884 battle for the title was filled with injuries and contested results. When the time stopped on the game, the scoreboard read 6-4 in favor of Yale. However, the time was stopped early because it got dark. The referee, by the rule book, was right to assert that this rule, properly speaking, Yale that won the game. But on the mere technicality, I was forced to call the contest a draw. The rule calls for two full three-quarter power innings to be played. The game's early closure and declaration of a tie was unpopular on both sides. It was first of what would be eventually become many instances of deciding a national championship off the field. The Intercollegiate Football Association met right after the game to determine the winner. So on November 27, 1884, another rules convention was held at the Fifth Avenue Hotel. This convention was the appeal by Yale and their coach, Walter Camp, to alter the decision by referee R.M. Appleton of Harvard in the Princeton-Yale game of that year, as a no contest in the score officially being recorded as 0-0. Mr. Hull of Harvard had to make a decision after hearing arguments from both schools in a private meeting. Hull exited the conference and declared Yale the winner based on the score of the referee's initial decision. Princeton to this day still claims that the 1884 was a championship year, and that NCA and Park H. Davis also agree that the game should have been declared as a tie by rule since not enough of the game was completed to count as a completed contest. Well, eventually Mr. Appleton's decision was upheld after a long debate. The appeal conference marked a need for defining the responsibilities of the referee. So, the next convention would be at the defining moment when the officials would become an integral component to our beloved game. Please look for the results of the 1885 conventions in the next edition of the Pigskin Dispatch's Football History Rewind in Part 8, Football Fandom Arises, right here, pigskindispatch.com, sportshistorynetwork.com, and your favorite podcast provider. We were able to get this in-depth look from so long ago in history by careful research. Using someone who was a contemporary to that period is the best source. So a very special shout out to our main source of reference information in this article is from Park H. Davis, the great historian, in his 1911 written book, Football, the American Intercollegiate Game. So we're glad that you could join us today. We hope you'll come back and join us for some more of great football history, because we cover it each and every day. And we're trying to put these Football History Rewind editions the year by year, 2 to 3 times a week. So check out throughout the week, as we have many great series going on. Beginning of the week, we cover our early pro football teams. We try to go through all of them that we can, get some great historians on here to talk about it. Middle of the week, we talk about the scandals and scoundrels of football, some of the great events in football history that maybe had a little bit of a villainous side to them. Near the weekend, we're going to sit there and talk about maybe some of the games and hobbies and collections that were innovations of football. They were inspired by football, and we've had a great time with that, and I think you have too. We've got some great listenership on all those, and make sure you check us out each and every day, because we are the portal to positive football history, pigskindispatch.com. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.